Thank you, Wolfgang. Thank you, everybody, for coming. And thanks. Let me thank first the members of the group. Quantum Gravity for inviting me this week and for letting me talk about this recent work. So basically, what I'm going to try to propose you is a recent attempt to encompass what I learned from tensor network techniques into the quantum gravity framework or quantum field theoretic framework of group field theory. So it's an exploratory work, and then I mean I really need your point of view, and so please interrupt me whatever you want, and also yeah, if I say something wrong, completely wrong, please correct me. So basically, the whole point starts. So in the abstract was a bit maybe misleading because it was the word ADS Mira in the first place. And the point is that what I wanted to refer to with ADS Mira was basically a framework, which is a very recent framework, which is very interesting, and it's the one associated to the connection between geometry and entanglement, which is basically due to ADS-CFT and concretized in terms of the Ryo Takayanagi holographic entanglement entropy. So the way we can derive entanglement entropy for reduced states of conformal field theories on the boundary of some dual configuration in terms of minimal surfaces which enter into the bulk. Okay, there was a lot of work in this sense. I mean, it's one of the hottest topics in current days. But what I'm really, I mean, interested about is the fact that it involves a lot of different approaches, and possibly it allows for a convergence of techniques which are from known perturbative quantum gravity and strings, apart from condensed matter and quantum information theory. So it's kind of very exciting and probably very promising. So a very important, I mean, key impulse to all this story, I mean, is relies on tensor network techniques, basically. Why so? I mean, okay. Tensor networks, basically, and the work of Vidal allowed to improve a lot our the way we understand entanglement in condensed matter theory, and basically these so in the ADS-CFT correspondence, basically this led to a conjecture, the conjecture that multiscale entanglement renormalization, so tensor network representation of a ground state of a conformal field theory in terms of graph which are characterized by some holographic hyperbolic geometry may actually be interpreted as a discrete realization of the holographic duality itself. Okay, so basically the conjecture suggesting that some physics of the ADS-CFT correspondence can be modeled by mirror-like or possible different tensor networks. And quantum entanglement will play, in this case, the role of a building, I mean, the fundamental character of space-time at the microscopic level. Okay, so beyond the ADS Mira, this conjecture basically opened a new paradigm for studying holographic systems. And there has been a lot of work using a different tensor network approach to study structural properties of holography beyond the hyperbolic geometry and conformal field theory, basically. These are related to the so-called, the use of quantum information theory and basically the possibility to use quantum error correcting codes, which has a bit properties of the ADS-CFT correspondence, can be used to do bulk reconstruction and fulfilling the Ryo Takayanagi relation. So, and in particular, this frame, such a generalized framework for the entanglement geometry entanglement correspondence, has raised a lot of interest in the non-perturbative quantum gravity context. where entanglement, I mean, is supposed from the beginning to play a very important role to define the architecture of space-time. Okay. And here, I mean, very interesting recent new efforts have provided a further understanding of this holography duality from a non-perturbative quantum gravity point of view. And so in general, the type of mathematical structures that are involved in tensor networks and in discrete and non-perturbative quantum gravity, discrete gravity approaches and non-perturbative quantum gravity are very similar. So we are discussing about tensor maps, basically. So it's very natural to try to put these two formalism a bit in a more systematic connection. And this is basically the main content of my talk. What are the motivation for that? So motivation are many. I mean, from the point of view of quantum gravity, tensor networks, I mean, as tensor network techniques are very effective in controlling the entanglement properties of quantum space-time. Okay, so they can be used as tensor network techniques in order to study the properties of the boundary states of spin foams, for example. These tensor networks may become then a central tool in renormalization, as was already explored recently. And again, I mean, in the same way they are used for standard lattice field theories, they may be very useful, very important to gain insight in the open issue of finding a ground state for quantum gravity, for example. So we can use, once we have a dictionary, we can use these algorithms in quantum gravity, but also from the point of view, conversely, of tensor networks. I mean, quantum gravity and non-perturbative quantum gravity provides a new framework where these techniques can be used, so it's possibly interesting also from the other point of view. And also, I mean, some aspects of the quantum field theory characterization of the tensor algorithms that I would like to give may be useful also for the sake of variational approaches that these algorithms provide. Like, for example, if you have a path integral which sum over geometries, which can take into account the topologies, for example, of the graph, this can be possibly useful also for tensor networks. And this is a question mark because I don't really know. So this is basically the outline. So it's minimal outline. So we will give you some definitions, which then, I mean, minimal definition, and I will try to define then a dictionary between the two formalisms, and then I will try to apply this to this dictionary, and I will show you that basically the field theoretic nature of the tensorial maps that we use in group field theory basically, I mean, can be used to describe the random tensor network naturally. So the random character of the tensor network, which is of specific tensor networks, which I call random tensor networks, are basically maps nicely into a field theoretic description of spin networks, basically. Yeah. And I will show you that these field theoretic tensor networks with the quantum gravity flavors, they satisfy the Euler-Kainic formula, and so they are interesting for studying holography, probably. Okay, so this is what I want to give some really basic, something that everybody, the basics of tensor network, in the sense that I want to show you what I understand of these and what I will then try to reproduce. So for me, a tensor network is basically just a set of tensors whose indices are connected according to a network pattern, I mean, in terms of what eventually we have, and then not what we want to do with them. So basically, the whole story consists in if you want to use a tensor network to represent wave function of a certain quantum many body system on a lattice, you see that when you expand the pure state of a certain theory that you have in terms of Okay. On a lattice, so the wave function basically is a tensor, in fact, characterized by index, a physical index associated to the lattice, lattice size. Okay. And this wave function, this tensor, has a number of so then you want to vary parametrically. Okay. So you want to define variational ansatz basically to characterize faithfully reproduce the structural correlation of some ground state, for example. And what you want to do then is opening basically this wave function and construct an auxiliary tensor in which you can encode the right structural correlation. Okay. So to do that, basically you start from a tensor which is nothing but the wave function of your state that you expand, and then you create an auxiliary tensor made of new subtensors, okay. And then basically you have in terms of the rank of the new tensor that you use and the dimension of the bonds of the links of these auxiliary structures, you can tune these parameters variationally in order to get the best realization of the state you are looking for. So in this sense, MIRA is nothing but a very well engineered tensor network algorithm, which allows you to faithfully represent the ground state of a conformal field theory, basically, or if you want, of theories which have critical systems. So the holographic character of the geometry of these diagrams. The hyperbolic character of the geometry of these diagrams is what then induces the idea as MIRA correspondence, and then it's natural to ask whether you can provide, in terms of quantum gravity, a richer characterization of these graphs. Okay. So what I'm using, so I want to use here, is a framework which is very general, and this framework includes quantum gravity and spin foams in particular, but can be also interpreted agnostically without really thinking of it in terms of quantum gravity, but just as a field theoretic basically description of spin networks. Okay, and this is a group field theory, which is a generalization of tensor models, or if you want, an higher order matrix model, which is endowed with the group field information, which is basically allowing you to introduce the information about the local gauge symmetries of the theory you are taking into account. For example, Young-Mills, or in case of gravity, that would be the local gauge symmetry group in the first order description in terms of connections and tetrads. So the group field theory is a quantum field theory for complex fields defined on copies of the Lie group manifold, which has a combinatorially non-local interaction. Okay, this is a typical partition function. The action basically is given by the Gaussian measure on the random fields with some propagating kernel and some interaction kernel. Okay, so the GFT field can be by itself already seen as an infinite dimensional tensor, which transforms under the action of d copies, the rank copies of the unitary group. Okay, these quantum field theories basically provide a second quantized description of spin foam models, so they have a direct contact with quantum gravity, with discrete quantum gravity. And this is why the reason why we want to use it. In particular, then we want to restrict the attention to cases of group field theories where basically the choice of the kernel and and interaction vertices are those which allows us to describe simplicial gravity, like, for example, the Bulatov model. Okay. In this case, for example, let me show you what I mean. So how, basically, starting from the tensorial structure of these fields, we end up having graphs or Feynman amplitudes which have a simplicial interpretation, hence a geometrical interpretation in gravity. This is the case was saying of d is equal to 3, d is the rank here. So we have a theory which is doing nothing but basically telling us how these tensor, single tensor fields are glued together, okay? And how the interaction is basically so telling us how these fields among those, so okay. Each field can be given some geometrical interpretation, okay? For example, in this case, this tensor will be associated to, can be associated to the face of to a triangle. So it has 3 degrees of freedom, basically. The 3 links associated to, the 3 legs of this tensor will be dual to the faces of a triangle, okay? So a gauge invariant object, so a gauge invariant field is such that can reproduce basically the phase space of a triangle, okay? And then gluing different fields corresponds to gluing different triangles. So the information I put in the interaction and in the propagator basically is telling me how these triangles glue together, and eventually the amplitudes are related to, are associated to simplexes, which have a geometrical interpretation. So you have to think of these simplexes as spin foams. And in this case, for example, this simple case in 3 dimension gives you a way to create foams which are characterized by building blocks which are tetrahedra in space, okay? But as I was saying before, this is nothing but basically an enriched tensor model, so it's just about how tensors are glued together in a dynamical way. Okay. The nice thing is that, as I was saying before, I mean the partition, partition function, and the, if you want, the perturbative expansion of these models is very well studied. So we know how to characterize the in the 1/n expansion, for example, the universality properties of these spin foam graphs, and also how to control the topology of this graph in many, many cases. Okay, so let me now give you a more strict relation, correlation between between what a tensor is and what a field theory, what a field in group field theory is, and how the two are related naturally. Okay, so a quantum state of a theory can be given, yeah, it's right. There is a natural way in which you can see basically a field in a group field as related to a tensor and to a tensor network in particular. Is basically, since this is a field over copies of compact group, you can use Peter Weil and Spand basically in irreducible representations of the group you are considering, for example, in this case SU2, in loop quantum gravity is SU2, and what you get is the same thing that we were seeing before. So if you think of these as a, basically you have a tensor here, which is given by the contraction between intertwiners and the modes, okay, which again is a tensor, which depends on in spin labels and magnetic momentum labels, expanded in a basis which is the standard spin network basis. But this is not the way we want to exploit this duality, because this characterization, because what we really need, what we really care about is the quantum field theoretic description, not the spin network description. Okay. So let me go ahead in terms of quantum field theory formalism. So what I want to do is first introduce you the interpretation of a group field in terms of single particle wave function. Okay, trivially, you are writing your state basically as an expansion, where the field now is the wave function, which it depends on the n copies of your group elements on a basis of which lives in basically an infinite dimensional space L2 of the group. So that is a straightforward analogy. And from a single particle wave function, you can construct basically from the Hilbert space of a single particle wave function, you can construct Fock space. You can promote your fields to operator naturally. Generally, in group field theory, you use bosonic statistics because you want to somehow recover the relabeling symmetry, which is what is left of diffeomorphism in a sense in a discrete description of. In a graph description of the gravitational field. And hence you can introduce the n particle state naturally in a group representation of the Fock space in terms of these operators. So what you want to do is to have a Fock space and act with operators which generate tensors, basically. So if I act with a single field operator, I will generate a single tensor. If I act with something which is an observable associated to a graph, I will generate a graph. Okay, and then the structure of the wave function, in particular, will tell me about the combinatorial, the combinatorics of this tensor network, if you want. I can introduce naturally another complete basis of coherent states, okay, in this Fock space. As you see, well, here, this is really the standard definition of the coherent state on the Fock vacuum, and this is again a basis of n particle state. And most importantly, I can define then observables. A standard observable is the action, clearly. But what we really are interested in is a graph state operator, as I was saying before. So I can define a graph state operator. As you see, this is a many body, if you want, a wave function. And this is a product of a single particle operators. So basically, the effect of the action of this operator on the Fock space is nothing but creating enucleating tensors. And with some wave function character, which is given by this specific prescription here. This can be seen more in the language and even more later in the language of tensor network, in the sense that what you are doing is basically creating particles and then giving me a many-body wave function and also some, if you want, way to convolve these fields. So basically, those are links you want. You are taking legs of your tensors, which are group elements, and you are convolving them with some function that eventually will substitute these two group elements with the new group elements, which will be the one associated to the link. Okay.
So we have one question.
Yeah.
So n nodes, you mean you have an n particle state?
Yeah.
And your graph wave function depends on n group elements, or is it?
Yes. Right.
So, is it on the nodes?
No. This bold G is a.
It's a condensed notion.
It's a vector. So for each node, you have.
E D elements.
Yes. Exactly.
Then.
So this is something like psi or gamma of some G1, G2, G3.
So for every node, you have these.
Yeah.
So is this graph function? Is this then gauge-invariant, or is this still?
Yes, you can do everything in a gauge-invariant way.
So you do identify the group elements,
yeah. So you can do everything in a gauge-invariant way a priori, and then you have to, yeah. What do you mean, in the wave function?
It's not clear in your notation. What is G, what is H? You have two group elements, which one is B?
Why?
Psi gamma depends.
Ah, yeah, okay. This is a G, if you want. This is a, well, It should be a G, yeah, it's a typing error.
Oh, these G's act as gauge actions or something. Yeah.
Well, in any case, yeah, this G and H.
That so you have H's which are on the edges, and you have G's which are on the vertices.
Yeah.
And then you want to convolve them.
Yes, exactly.
The function is usually the psi gamma prime, right? And what is M?
Here M, and let me show you. Ham is basically the convolution function which typically in a graph theory is a delta. So more generally than a delta, you can have some function which is implementing gauge invariants in a gauge invariant way, a connectivity between two tensors. So it's basically the link you want, convolution function. Okay?
Down there you see that
Think of
E equal to G, the guy that was HM. And then earlier you
were saying that G should be the guy that shows the vertex. Sorry, so let me see.
The last equation, kind of the exact opposite of what you just said.
Okay. So what I'm doing is, I made some mix of notation for sure. So, well, what you're doing here is you grasp the group elements attached to the link of the tensors, and you convolve them in a gauge invariant way, and in such a way that eventually those two links are labeled by a group element HL. Now, here HL became GL, but yes, this is basically mathematically what you are doing, right? So at the end of the day, what you have is a graph. Okay, this is a wave function of a graph which has some GL elements on the links and some open links a priori, more generally, which is what we want, characterized by holonomies G delta. So there may be some other problem of notation. This is typically random, but. Okay. Well, for example, sorry?
Like, do I need to know the last expression? Because there's a
this one?
Phi appearing, which I don't see on the left hand side.
Phi here?
Yes.
This is. Is this one? So. This is a full operator in the Fock space. And that's the point. Oh, well, it's basically this is an excess of notation. In a sense, what I wanted to show you is that you get a many-body wave function in general, and this depends. It's a functional of the fields, and which are functional of the group elements. There is nothing.
It's a field. Psi gamma is a functional of the field.
Yes. So psi gamma is the wave function associated to the graph. It's a functional of the fields on the single node, basically, on each single node. And basically, eventually, will be a function of the group elements by which you are coloring the graph. The point is here to get this standard expression out from a Fock description, nothing more than that, consistently. So it's not really the main point. And then basically here, oops, you can see what I was saying before. So this M that if I want to encode it into a vector state, this is really the operator acting, which is basically projecting you on a subspace of two, again, this would be GG, of two indices, and give you the link. And therefore, you can write the full tensor network in terms of a tensor trace, basically, between your single particle state. So each a node on on each, sorry, a state on each node times the links. Okay? And this would be an object living in the Hilbert space, which is given by a copy, a product of the Hilbert space of the link of the open dangling indices, basically, of your original tensor. Okay, so this is a way to reproduce in group field theory a standard description of a tensor network, basically. So it's a tensor network where the structure of correlation, so the weight that I, in particular, I put on the links are given by the choice of the link function. And it has a natural random character because it's described in terms of fields. And in particular, this allows us to define, averages in terms of the Gaussian measure and or the polynomially perturbed Gaussian measure. So dynamics, in this sense, enters in a natural way, not for in terms of dynamics of graph, but really in terms of averaging. And I think you have some point which is not clear, or?
Maybe explain in standard GFT terms what you are calculating.
Here, this is just in standard GFT terms, it's just the fundamental observable that you have, so a graph, basically.
A graph observable.
Yeah, so graph observable. And
I associate it to one species slide, so it's just a species.
Okay, I didn't want to give any, but yes, you can associate this to, in spin network would be a special slice. Okay. So this is an open graph, basically, in spin network, nothing more than that. You can think of it as an open graph of a cut of a spin foam, or as just an open graph in terms of spin networks purely. So, okay. Okay. So, yeah. Basically, we can use the partition function to calculate averages. So, this is just a couple, a summarization of what of the standard. I mean, the natural. Basically, you can naturally encode the information in tensor networks in terms of group fields. Down the point is how to use it and how interesting it is to use it, this dictionary. And one interesting point is that actually you can, you have a natural application which is basically given by random tensor models, random tensor networks. These random tensor networks are tensor networks, so which are characterized by maximal entangling links. Okay, so correlations are maximally entangled along links, and they are a random network. So at each node, you have a random network, which is a tensor, which is taken at random in its Hilbert space with respect to the unitary measure. And these random tensors are interesting because they, being random, they show universality properties and they satisfy Ryuta-Kayanagi entropy formula, as was shown by Aiden. Basically, all perfect tensors that you use to construct error correcting codes are idealization of this random tensor network in the large bond regime. So when you have the dimension of the bond, the links in our language, which becomes very, very big. Interesting is that in the case of GFT, basically the links being, attached to by being described by group levels have a very, very big dimension. I mean, from the beginning, because you have a field indices which lives in a continuous space. So a priori, this dimension is infinite unless you don't regularize it. So we expect to find naturally universal properties for these networks in terms of GFTs, okay? And this is, so basically what we did was to use this dictionary to reproduce a calculation done by Haydn and collaborators and see whether in our language the Ryutaka-Yanagi formula was reproduced. So,
can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I'm very confused by this setup, because in tensor network, you know, the evolution is a radial evolution. So it's like you're creating your states. You have a dynamical description of what is your boundary states. In GFT, you know, the boundary states is purely kinematical, and then you compute the time evolution of that. So I'm not sure.
What do you mean, planar? You mean like?
Well, you compute the speed form. The GFT computes speed form level.
Oh, sure, but I mean.
What's the relationship?
Yeah, that's the point. I mean, in that case, you don't have any dynamics, right? In tensor networks, you have just a single graph. And this graph, you can maybe consider superposition among graphs, which are due to the fact that you can sum over, I mean, different values of the, for example, the weights that you put on links. But it's only one layer, in a sense. That's what your intuition.
But
in this case, well, it's radial if you have already in mind something like a disk, you know, a hyperbolic disk in ADS, for example. But more generally,
yeah, I mean, essentially it's about a slice, and your GFT.
Yeah. So the point, this is more, if you want, more simple and more generic, if you want. So this is just a tensor network. More generally, like for example, quantum error correcting code has not. And a geometric or space interpretation. It's just a network, and the question, I mean, that I can associate to what you are asking is, for example, how would you see Mera in these terms, in these dynamical terms, which is a good question. For example, how do you see the planar radial evolution associated to the renormalization flow in real space in Mera? In terms of dynamics, in this case, of a bubble. And this is a good point, and then maybe I will discuss it at the end. Okay. But so here, basically, dynamics is not, I don't want to think of dynamics as a really, you know, feeling the, what you do is generating basically space-time out of a boundary state. But you think of it as basically an averaging, a Gaussian averaging of some random field. Okay, so I'll show you how eventually this will behave in this example. So you start with your tensor network state described in terms of group field theory. Okay, it's basically graph wave function, it's a graph state with open indexes. You can define a partition of this graph, of the boundary. I mean, this graph lives in a boundary Hilbert space. So imagine you want to consider correlations between two regions which don't need to be adjacent of your boundary. So you consider a cat as usual, and you factorize your boundary Hilbert space, and you take the reduced density matrix of your boundary, of your state on, in this case, for example, in the subspace A. Okay, it's really, really standard. So you know how to define the density matrix. In particular, here, there is a very important point. In general, you will not have, depending on the form of the wave function of the graph, you will not have a factorization of your graph state in terms of single nodes, right? Because this depends on the fact that the wave function is basically a product of a single node wave function. So it's a choice. So in this case, we choose to have a wave function such that we can write this density matrix basically in terms of a collection of node density matrices glued by links density matrices. Okay. It's quite simple, I mean. But it's important in order to calculate averages and to let, I mean, to, and to, yeah, to fulfill some assumption in the calculation of expectation values. So we use in particular the technique of Reinie entropy, so basically on replica tricks. based on replica tricks. And what we want to calculate, given that we are using a random system, so field theory, we want to see what are the typical value of these entropies. Okay, this is a standard approach. So now here, the important thing is that this quantity is a very hard quantity to calculate. I mean, it's very hard to take the average of a logarithm of some partition function. And the nice thing of random networks with the large in the large bound limit is basically that they do self-averaging. Now they show basically if you can see that basically the logarithm the average enters into the logarithm. So you have the same thing that happens in spin, for example, spin glass, for example, so self-averaging. Basically, technically, this consists in the fact that if you expand, your average Rényi entropy in terms of fluctuation around the average quantities, the average partition functions, eventually you can show that for large bound, so when the system becomes very, very big, the dimension, the full dimension of the quantum system event becomes very, very big, then these fluctuations are washed away, hence you can basically pass the average inside the log and calculate this quantity in terms of averages of the partition functions, not of the logarithm. So this is a universality. I mean, it's a behavior which comes naturally in the thermodynamic limit. And so at the end of the day, for typicality, or if you want concentrational measure, I mean, something very, very, very universal, once you have a very large dimensional quantum mechanical system, you can say that this quantity is faithfully, basically, it's very, very close to your actual entropy. So at the end, that's what we want to calculate. Okay? So now the structure that we choose for this graph is it becomes very important because we want to take the expectation values of these trace over copies of the density matrix, reduced density matrix and full density matrix. The expectation values enter the trace clearly, but more importantly, given the factorized form of the wave function, so the fact that I can write basically my network state as a tensor product of single nodes, density matrix. At the end of the day, I am calculating the expectation values of a single nodes density matrix in n replica. Okay. Then the whole point is about doing this calculation and. Also the interesting point is basically that taking the expectation value in our field theory language basically is equivalent to consider the endpoint correlation function, right, of our GFT fields. So this is exactly what we're gonna calculate eventually. So we need to specify the form of our Gaussian measure. We will consider only the kinetic term. So basically, we discard the corrections to the Gaussian behavior. And then at the end of the day, the whole calculation will be by weak theorems, reducing to studying the action of the permutation operator, basically, and the loops induced by the action of the permutation operator on the basic structure given by the new observable, which are your partition functions. Basically, now you are, where is it? I lost. So what you have is an average. Of something which is given by trace, okay, some power of your density matrix, and then you wait in terms of the matrix. So here, what you are considering is really, it's a graph which is now given by this object. It's not the original graph. So it's much more complicated graph. So if you want, is a so you have this, if you want, solid graph that in a trivial case you may identify with a bubble, for example. Okay, it's a trace invariant. In general, it will be a very, very complicated graph. And then you insert propagators, basically. And then you study how, what are the leading contribution in the partition function in the expectation value then. So the calculation is actually very, very involved. And the interesting part that I want to, underline here is just that at the end of the day, this partition function are basically coincide in I'll tell you some extra assumption that is required, coincide with the amplitudes of the topological BF theory. And this is possibly also interesting for people doing tensor networks. Okay, so as you can see, if you want some details, basically is that this trace of powers of the reduced density matrix and full density matrix basically can be written in terms of the action of the permutation operator of the SN among n nodes. Here, this P is a basically the permutation operator that you use in order to define a reduced density metric. Is a standard trick used in condensed matter and statistical mechanics. And so this is basically what you do at the end of the day. So you define density metrics. Okay, for example, in this case, these A and B, they are collecting all the boundary edges that I have from A and B. Then you take the reduced trace. Okay, you have something like that. You take n replicas of these, and then the trace, the new observables are graphs, which are very simplified here, but are very complicated in general, which are fully contracted. And then once you average, so you take the expectation value. Basically, what you are doing is inserting propagators connecting this each link of this graph in the pink disk. So the pink disk is a very complicated graph, and a priori you should just by weak theorem you should permutate all the possible nodes inside this graph, which is really messy. It's really messy because it can be arbitrarily complicated, but it's also not necessary because basically we know that the leading contribution will come by taking by basically putting propagation among couples of single nodes in the graph. So you are everything, right? Because but okay, exactly. So what we assume here is, so we don't do that because at the end of the day, this propagation is doing, what you're doing is creating loops and then counting basically the divergence coming from these loops, okay? And you can say, it's really like having bubbles and Melloni contributions, that the most the leading contribution come from the most local lines. So even if you, this is very hard if you don't see the, so we can say, let's say it's a conjecture that should be proved in a sense, that working node by node, like in this case, so imagine this is a single node. So you have these two graphs, two copies, and then you insert the propagator line. So the way we do it is basically considering in each graph nodes in a pairwise. So you take a couple of nodes and you just connect those nodes and then their conjugate. Okay, so this is also a violation of the indistinguishability assumption. So, because it's like saying that I can distinguish field one, field in position one, from field in position two. And so it's a big truncation, but it's still probably producing the leading order contribution. Because at the end of the day, if you have very non-local propagating line, these are not giving you typically less loops. Right? The more non-local you are, the less loops you get in terms. So yeah, we're doing a big truncation. We are, and eventually we can calculate these objects. So we will have something which depends on the dimension of the bond, which now has to be box regularized, and goes with the number of the nodes times a combination of the combinatorial structure of the graph. So in this case, it's the total number of the links minus the links on the maximal spanning tree that you have to. I mean, there is a complicated way to arrive to this formula, which is quite nice and clean. The same thing you will do for the reduced expectation value of the n replica of the reduced density matrix, and you get something similar, which now depends also on the cuts that basically you are defining by splitting the state into A and B. So whenever you split the state into A and B, you always will have some indices which are associated to the boundary between the A and B. So you need to take the minimal value of this quantity in order to have the leading contribution. If you take the ratio between the two, what you get is this. So you get the minimal value of the number of links which I cut between A and B times the logarithm of the dimension of the link of the bond, which is exactly the Ryuta-Kayanagi formula. So, and if you want, it's interesting that we get that as a leading order. The assumption that we made basically to find this result are that just trivial box normalization of the dimension of the link, because you don't want to deal with infinities or divergent entanglement entropy, and basically the fact that we trivialize the anomalies inside the graph. Otherwise, in the loop that I was showing you before, you would have a contribution which need to take into account the anomaly inside the loop, and then this quantity, for instance, would be smaller than the case of when you have a identity for the link group element, and plus you will lose the nice connection with the BF. So let me conclude. So basically, we also worked with the interacting model. So what happens if you consider interaction? So if you perturb your Gaussian measure, this is very, very interesting, and calculation is more complicated. But what it shows is that since you are inserting basically in kernels, interaction vertices into your already very complicated graph, you get corrections to the area law, as you would expect, and so these corrections are, associated to the interaction, so are labeled by the order of the interaction kernel that you are taking, so they cannot be mixed with the possible corrections that come from the truncations that we were considering before, and can be associated to actual bulk degrees of freedom. So for example, if you had a black hole, you would have in the bulk, for example, in a DSFT, you see that your minimal surface are curved by the presence of some internal degrees of freedom, so bulk degrees of freedom. And here we see something close to that. You see that when you have a bulk, which in this case are interpreted in terms of interaction vertices, you have corrections to the area law. And Yeah, I think I already said something about that. So it's also nice. It's very nice that we end up having something like BF amplitudes, and also because there is a lot of work in this subject, so we know how to control these the divergence associated to these amplitudes. So, and the conclusion then, so what we did was establishing this dictionary between group field theory states and so quantum field theory and generalized random tensor networks by first defining a dictionary between tensor networks, tensors, and group fields, and then extending this to tensor network wave functions. And then we show that we can compute observables, compute entropy of tensor networks in this formalism, and reproduce basically the properties of random tensor networks, for instance. The question is then, how shall we use this formalism? I mean, we can, for example, study what's the actual role of the dynamics, for example, in a randomization scheme perspective. We can, and we can hope that, by using the connection between group field theory and spin foam and quantum gravity, we can, induce a gravitational characterization of the networks in tensor network techniques. So, possible generalization of RDS MERA beyond RDS and conformal field theory and conformal symmetry. And then that's just a comment to say that clearly this analogy, between a structural analogy, which is relying on tensor, was already considered before, and also very well, used intensively to study randomization, and for example, in spin foam by Bianca and the other people, Sebastian, particular here. So that's it. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Can you go back to, 26? I was wondering, because you, maybe I got a bit lost in between or couldn't get the point, but you were saying, you were mentioning here the cosmological constants. What is its role in the definition of this?
This entropy or the cosmological constant?
No, lambda.
Okay, here lambda is something you just use, like in terms of quantum group. It's associated to the scheme of a normalization of the dimension of the link with the space. So this would be infinite, right? It's some where j of chi j and times dj. So it's the irreducible representation. Of the group associated to the group has an infinite dimension, and then you want to just to put a cutoff. And typically, the cutoff is associated to some cosmological constant in a sense. Once you have a gravitational interpretation of that, so I don't know. There is here is just a cutoff, but there is a maybe possible way in which you can see this as carrying some interpretation of curvature in the bulk you are considering. So it's an open question, I think.
Can you show the dictionary slide again, because you showed it like for 5 seconds?
Yeah, typically it's scary and...
you show something scary?
Yeah, I mean, probably the whole thing was a bit technical and scary, but... So basically you see here the one by one, the relation. So you have Here I'm not using the operator formalism, so I'm. But you see that single link state basically is associated to the group basis. The one particle state is a tensor, okay? Where the wave function now is characterizing the tensor. So you can introduce information about the, you can dress the tensor with a wave function here in the same way you do in tensor state. Then link state in tensor network techniques is written in this way. So it's something which is correlating two states associated to two legs of different tensors and projecting into some reduced state. And the same you can do at the level of field theory by convolving the group associated to the different legs of your combinatorial tensor, if you want, in terms of some generic function, which typically is a delta. So, okay. Here is written in the most general way. And then you can define multiparticle state. And this would be the analog of a tensor network state.
What is for you a tensor network state? So this is really this.
So for the tensor network state, and it's basically it's the way I connect. I mean, if you have let me just see the definition of a tensor network state. A set of tensors whose indices are connected according to a network pattern. This is a definition.
The state is really just a function of the outside indices.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's something which lives in the Hilbert space of the physical indices, but has a diagram structure which is given by a suitable auxiliary graph, which then you use to variationally optimize the ground state you want to obtain. But at the end of the day, it's basically the way I unfold basically a tensor in a substructure of given by smaller tensors. And the whole thing that you do in a tensor network algorithm is basically, vary the rank or the dimension of these of the bonds of the auxiliary structure in order to get the right amount of entanglement for your structure. So if you have a gap system, you want something which scales with air. Yeah. So, and so you see that the having tensor maps, I mean tensor fields, I mean allows you to reproduce exactly the same formalism. But now, you can put this formalism in contact with gravity. Basically, this is the idea.
So on the left-hand side, you randomize the tensors and the network.
Yeah, on the left-hand side, I randomize the network. So in principle, I should randomize the network, but I can randomize a single tensor if I have a tensor structure for the network. Right. So in the random tensor state, I mean, is built in such a way that basically you have tensors which are random, taken at random at each node. In this case, you don't have this. You have a full structure, which is non-local. I mean, it's a full graph. And then you want to take an expectation value of this observable or a combination of these observables given by tensor trace, for example, or partition functions, as we did. In the case where you can factorize this, the wave function, so you can think of the density matrix associated to this graph, basically, as a collection of single node partition density matrices, then you end up taking the expectation value of the single node. So it's basically equivalent to this case, but it's a specific choice. So it is clear from here. Here, you see the okay, forget about the n copies. Here you have a product of links and the product of nodes and a single density matrix defined for each node. In general, here you would have just, if you want, a single row, which is not a tensor product of individual row. And you can still take the expectation value of the full guy instead of basically going node by node. And that would be something more complicated, of course. So in order to reproduce a random tensor network scheme or algorithm, you need to factorize your wave function.
If there are no any more questions, maybe let's thank our speaker again.